I pin my hopes to quiet processes and small circles in which vital and transforming events take place. We all need some circle of belonging where we can find fellowship, even or especially amidst difference. We all need some circle of deep listening, where we can be invited to unfold our hearts and spirits. We all need a circle of searching, where we can ask and find the hard questions, formulate our temporary solutions, and chart our paths forward. And the truth is that we are all already and always held in a circle of love. Our holy task is to make that love more visible by heeding those quiet processes, by nurturing the bonds of trust between us. It is good to be together. Maybe I've told this story before to you. When I was a college chaplain years ago, every other Thursday night, I would invite students over to our home for dinner and conversation. Sometimes upwards of 60 students would crowd into our home. The college subsidized our rent, but they knew we needed a larger home to accommodate these important gatherings. They were young people of all different races and religions, including many a religion. It was Maine, where the tradition is to take off your shoes in someone's home, especially in the winter. So this is what, a glimpse of what our entryway would look like. Lots of backpacks, too. The young people would drape themselves over the side of the already full couches and chairs and didn't mind sitting on the floor. We'd eat dinner on our laps and then have a conversation. 60 people was too many for a conversation, so we trained some students as facilitators and we dispersed into the different rooms of the house. We'd have what we called a query from the tradition. A query is a question such as, what mask do you wear and how do you feel about it? Or where do you see new growth happening? Or a question we've considered in this church before, what beautiful contributions do you contain? The students treasured this time, as did I, in part because it was a conversation distinct from their typical modes of conversation in a college environment in particular, which were academic debate or superficial party banter, or talk with people just like ourselves, or that kind of talking where you know the other person is not truly listening, but waiting to offer their comparison, or advice, or distraction. Our conversations together had a covenant. Usually you only spoke once until everyone else had had a chance to speak. No one responded directly, verbally, to someone's sharing. Instead, we nurtured a silence between the responses. Some confessed the silence felt really awkward at first, but soon they found the silence nourishing, that the silence could convey better than words could, I hear you, or me too, or we're with you. The times of silence also nurtured our abilities to listen better, both inwardly and outwardly. Everyone grew to know that silence was not absence, but presence. I imagine that this is what our friend Lynn talked about last week. I witnessed these young people sharing things with one another they had never even told themselves. I witnessed them have ideas and insights, sometimes about their classes, that could have been kindled only by the depth of that sacred group, We called these Thursday evenings hearth, for we felt we were gathered around the warm hearth of a home that we all built through our brave ventures with one another into the hearts of our lives and what it means to live. Do you remember when you first came to Unitarian Universalism, or to this congregation, or to any church? What were you looking for? What were you hoping to find? Many times, people are seeking, turns out, after what the Unitarian James Luther Adams called intimacy and ultimacy. Intimacy and ultimacy. Intimacy is about belonging, connecting, fellowship. We need more people in our lives who truly know us. Brené Brown says, "What we know matters, but who we are matters more. Being rather than knowing requires showing up and letting ourselves be seen." And the poet Mark Nepo would say that seeing requires us to slow down and let in what is before us. In this world, we often need more experiences of being deeply listened to without any fixing or advising or comparing or lecturing. We need to better understand people different from us and feel a sense of belonging within that difference. This is intimacy. Ultimacy is about seeking deeper meaning of what is profoundly true and good. The search for truth and meaning requires more than armchair philosophizing or listening to a sermon. I believe meaning is most power formed through relationship. As I described with those young people at our home, I witnessed them having ideas and insights that could have only been kindled by the depth of that group. I think in our rationalist post-Enlightenment world, we sometimes think that we have the language for things, the meaning for things, somewhere packaged up deep within us, in our brain perhaps. And we just need to pull it out, already in paragraph form. In reality, that meaning-making happens, is created with one another, between one another. I see the therapists in the room nodding their heads. We hear each other into speech. We hear each other into speech, as the feminist Nell Morton said. And how we listen shapes the meaning one makes. Carl Menninger said, "Listening is a magnetic and strange thing. The friends who listen to us are the ones we move toward. When we are listened to, it creates us, makes us unfold and expand." The practice of cultivating intimacy and ultimacy are spiritual practices. And it turns out we all have a new opportunity for this practice. If you read our newsletter, or our weekly announcements, or our Facebook page, or our chalkboard, etc., you'll know that today marks the kickoff of our new Chalice Circles sign-up. Chalice Circles are groups of 5 to 9 people who will meet consistently for a covenanted conversation about how a monthly theme connects to their lives. We wanted to start Chalice Circles here because of that need for intimacy and ultimacy. Attending Sunday service meets some of that need for some of us. Going to church social events, working side by side on projects, teaching the children's classes, attending meditation opportunities, all of these are essential parts of our mission. And Chalice Circle is an important addition to the fulfillment of that mission, because in a small covenant group, we can dig deep into questions about life, ultimacy, and we can deepen relationship and belonging, intimacy. So Chalice Circles, and some of you who have been to other UU churches may know this or even been part of this. Chalice circles are what church people call small group ministry. The groups are called by many different names in different churches, covenant groups, small groups, etc., but all with the same purpose and structure. They are more and more relied upon in many churches, including UU churches, as a powerful way to learn to live out our principles. So I'd like to tell you my colleague's story of her experience, of her first experience of Chalice Circles. And she calls it by the name Small Group Ministry. So this is the story of my colleague Laura Brandis, who many of you may have met. She was the one of several UU ministers who spoke at my installation service last year. So here's what Laura says. I was introduced to small group ministry at the First Unitarian Church of Dallas. I co-led a group for 3 years with my friend Bill. He wasn't my friend before we co-led the group together. I had never met him before we were thrown together as co-leaders. There was a woman in our group named Janie who taught me a lot of what I now know about small group ministry. She's gone now, having died several years ago from cancer. When I met her, she was in her late 60s or early 70s, and if she had not by chance been assigned to my group, I doubt I would have ever known her. Her one child was an adult. My children were in grade school. She lived in one of the wealthy areas of Dallas. I lived in one of the more modest areas. She wore fur in the winter. I wore my grandmother's hand-me-down Harris tweed wool coat. She frequented the high-end arts establishments like the opera and the Dallas Theater Center. I worked behind the scenes in the arts. She was a patron. I was staff. We did not travel in the same circles. But as Unitarian Universalists looking for a place to belong and a place to seek meaning, we landed in the same circle, a circle that would eventually provide a sacred space for deep listening. Our group did not start out that way. We did not know each other. We did not trust each other. We did not trust the process. We did not want to follow the covenant, to refrain from crosstalk, judging, or giving advice. And we really didn't want to sit in silence, waiting for the next person to speak. We were all really uncomfortable with letting any instant of unknowing grow between what is said and our impulse to immediately respond. We were Unitarian Universalists. We wanted to discuss and argue like we had always done. We wanted to give advice and fix. We wanted to judge the ones wearing fur and to make our arguments for or against. Bill and I were trained to respect the process and the covenant, and eventually we came to trust both the process and the covenant. Janie came infrequently to our meetings and couldn't quite get on board with how we were all beginning to trust the process, the covenant, and each other. How we would actively listen to each other without interrupting, and how we would listen even when we were speaking so that one person wouldn't dominate the conversation. One night, Janie dominated the conversation by responding to what everyone had previously shared with rebuttals and defense of the way she saw the topic. Rather than honoring the safety of the group by listening with an open heart, Janie wanted to enter into a debate. And I stopped her. I gently reminded her that our purpose was to hear each other's stories and to begin to know each other in some depth. Janie wanted a discussion group, not a covenant group. I wasn't sure we would see her again after that night. She didn't come back to our group right away, but not because she didn't like the structure or the process. 2 weeks after I had stopped Janie from wrecking our group process, her son, a policeman, responding to a call of a robbery in progress, was shot and killed. Janie didn't come back to the group immediately after her son's tragic death, but she did come back. She came back, and we sat with her in stunned silence. She came back, and we said we didn't know what to say. She came back, and we waited with her. We waited with her, letting unknowing grow between us. Without a ready response, all we could do was climb down with her into the depths of her despair with her and sit and wait. I pinned my hopes to quiet processes and small circles in which vital and transforming events take place. Turns out that Janie's son, who was shot, was part of the Texas 7 situation that happened years ago. And part of what she felt that listening that the group gave her, inspired her to do, was to work for justice and to remember her son. We all need intimacy and ultimacy. What quiet processes and small circles do you have that help you cultivate intimacy and ultimacy? I believe these small circles are where we can dig deep into the mission of our church. I've talked about most of these, but welcoming diversity, to find belonging amidst difference, this is something we talk about a lot as UUs. And when people talk about the importance of finding our commonalities, I think that what is most transformative to relationships is not necessarily finding common beliefs or even common values. Sometimes those can be strikingly different, as we know, based on what's going on in the world in many, many areas. What we have in common, we find in these small circles, what we have in common deep needs, strengths, courage, wisdom. We can know about these things we have in common intellectually, but experiencing them together, getting proximate, as Brian Stevenson says, is what transforms. Then we can hear other people's diverse understandings of reality with curiosity and humility. So I'm going to close today with a few words specifically about chalice circles. This feels strange to do in a sermon because it was like a pitch, but I guess it is a little bit of a pitch. So signups begin today, and they close near the end of October. Circles start in November. You can read more about chalice circles in any of our communications or on our webpage. And next Sunday, right after service, we will have a short introduction to Chalice Circles from the Chalice Circles implementation team and a Q&A. So next Sunday, right after service, just for about half hour. And then today, right after service, we invite you, if you'd like to stay, into an experience of small group discussions. They'll only be 30 minutes long, so just until 12:30 or so. And they'll invite you to reflect this time on your experience of today's service, something that moved you, a phrase or a concept, the music, a feeling, a memory, an insight. Because our conversations today are only going to be 30 minutes long, structure will be different from the chalice circle structure, but you'll still get that taste of having a covenanted conversation with a small group. So I encourage you, if you hear a small, still voice of curiosity, or a big voice, to follow it and either sign up for the circles and or stay after service today for the discussions. And lastly, I want to introduce your two facilitators for Chalice Circles, Anna Paradox and Lynn Alsup. And I've invited Anna and Lynn to come up now and lead us in another responsive reading about those quiet processes and small circles in which vital and transforming events take place.